9:05, we're interviewing Erwin Baum. Interviewer is Martha Fraser. We're in Riverdale, New York, in the United States, and the language of the interview is English.
Can you please describe the conditions in the orphanage once it was in the ghetto?
Well, Dr. Korczak tried his best for the children not to suffer. He was walking around outside the ghetto. He kept his officer's Polish uniform. He refused to wear the, how you call it?
The Jewish star.
The Jewish star. He used to go to various organizations. He always managed to get a little bit extra for his orphanage. He even got arrested once for being out of the ghetto. But the influence of the higher authorities, knowing who Dr. Korczak is, they let him go. And in the ghetto, what did we children know? There was a situation that pains me up till now. Because during the good times, when there was plenty of food, I remember Dr. Korczak and all the other counselors walked around, make sure the children eat. Dr. Korczak also walked around. So I remember one time at my table, a child was eating, holding a piece of bread, and somehow he held it up in the air. Dr. Korczak went behind and grabbed this piece and put it in his mouth, a gesture, as a joke. Then what pains me, when we were in the ghetto, when food was very little, there used to be a blackboard. Like before the war, they used to say 2 eggs, everybody, or 1 apple, everybody. If somebody donated any pastry, 1 each. And that blackboard said 2 slices of bread. Everybody got 2 slices of bread. Dr. Korczak got 2 slices of bread. But Dr. Korczak never ate his bread. He gave to the children every time to another child. He gave it to me. And I took it also, not realizing that the man is getting skinnier and skinnier and skinnier. He didn't eat that type of a man he was. His memories are just killing me, why I did it. But my God, it was only once I took his bread because I was so hungry and I didn't realize what I'm doing. I was a child, but that type of a person he was. So I mean, they tried to keep the home pretty much normal, but it was impossible of these children coming in from everywhere. From everywhere, and the administration was out of control, and every so often we had to move, the house had to move. They took away this school for their own purpose and give us another place. So it was very tough, but yet children stuck to Dr. Korczak like it was undescribable. And then finally the terrible moment came. I used to, as I told you, I used to jump out of the ghetto to buy food. But once I was caught by a Polish policeman and he was beating me and took away all my bread. And then we had no more money, so I used to go beg. I was begging. And whatever I could get, I brought home a little bit for mama, and I brought a little bit for to home. Like there was a big warehouse where there was a depot of coals, and it was burning. But I saw people go there and get coal half burned. I brought it to the orphanage, you know, everybody was happy they could do some cooking, they had some firewood. And then again, I used to go out of ghetto, and Mama used to give me little bags made from linen. So I went to these homes, they asked me, what do you? I said, whatever you can give me, a little flour, a few grains, a little whatever, a few potatoes. So I used to bring. And one night I was out, and I was happy. I had a little bit I wanted to bring to the home, and that's when the children were taken. That's when the children, I was walking on the street and a few houses away was a woman like making the cross and crying, my God, they took him. So she meant they took the children.
And this was a Christian woman?
The Christian woman, yeah. They took the children. She was crying and they took him to the train stations, you know. And I ran there where I thought where it is, and I saw how the children are being put on trains, and Dr. Korczak had a kind of dispute with a German soldier and papers. Later on, I found out that they had papers for him to go to freedom, and he refused because he needed 200 more. And him and 200 children were taken straight to Treblinka, to the gas chambers.
When did you find out that that's where they were taken? Later?
When I found out later on, I mean, maybe a year or two later while I was in camp. Later on.
Because at that time, Dr. Korczak wouldn't have known where he was going?
He didn't know. I know. He dressed all the children nice, get best dressed, took a flag, and they were marching like they would go to a parade. Didn't know. And I was chased away, and then I went home to the ghetto to Mama, you know. And then...
You tried to join the group?
I tried to join them, but they chased me away. You're not Jewish, you don't look Jewish, get lost.
So when you were out of the ghetto, people thought you weren't Jewish?
Oh, they didn't know because I speak very clear Polish. They didn't know.
And you didn't, of course, wear your Jewish star?
No. I didn't wear my star. I spoke Polish. Then I went back to Mama, and then little by little, since the tragedy of starving people in the ghetto, an outbreak of typhus and all this sickness, we were trying to find a solution, what to do, I mean, how? Although my second brother, Yitzhak, used to go also out of the ghetto where around the campus, a butcher gave him a proposition. If you can take some meat and deliver it somehow, you're gonna get something for it. So there was a streetcar that used to speed by the ghetto, I used to jump off. So he used to be able to throw off a little bit for us, but it was no way of living. Then my mother had a sister about 100 kilometers out of Warsaw, a small town, where the hunger was not so bad. So one by one, mother sent my oldest brother, he succeeded, he had to be smuggled out of the ghetto and through the woods and walk till he got to his destination.
Did she pay someone to take
him? She had to pay this guy, but again, with some clothes, with some pieces, promises, you know, and out of pity, he always took a group. And he paid off the Polish policeman first and the German policeman to go out of the ghetto. Once he had a group out of the ghetto, they walked till they were at the destination. So my oldest brother succeeded. And my two sisters succeeded, two of them. Yeah, two of them. My sister went. And then mother said she would go now to that little town, and maybe she can get some money or some clothes that she can come back to Warsaw and pay this man or meet him over there, that he could bring us three out. So she went, she succeeded to get out of the ghetto. And then my third brother, Edel, got sick. He had typhoid fever. And he lies with fever, I remember so vividly. And he talks and screams, and he tells me, what's wrong with you? You're running around selling oranges, and Mama is behind bars and crying. We didn't make nothing of it, but then the super found out that there's someone in this house with fever. He sent the doctors, and they took us all to quarantines, and my brother to the hospital. And to my surprise, while we're in the quarantine, my mother shows up. They're bringing in my mother to the quarantine. What happened? Whatever my brother, in his fever, was true. She was caught out of the ghetto and put behind bars. And his fever, he saw that. So they brought my mother to quarantine. And somehow my brother survived the typhoid. He got out. And then one by one, we went to that town. We went to the town,
And the town was called?
Plonsk.
And was there a ghetto there?
There was a ghetto, but not strict also. You know, I started my little hustling. There was one little board, so I made with a nail that's loose, so I could kind of slide it aside and go out. And I used to buy in the ghetto papers to roll cigarettes and sold it to the farmers. They had a market every time. And sold it there. So things were going pretty smooth, pretty smooth.
And conditions in Plonsk were not as severe
not
as in
as
Warsaw?
Not as severe. Food was available because there are not too many people. But then a lot of people came. A lot of people came. Let me see. When we all went to Plonsk, Mama remained in Warsaw. It was just not enough money to pay the, so she remained with some friends. And we were there, everything is going fine, and all of a sudden, one night, the German authorities told everybody to come out of the houses, everybody. And we had to produce papers that we are residents of that town. So my oldest brother, David, he was keeping company with the president's daughter, so he got him an ID card that he's from downtown, so he was saved. Now, whoever produced that ID that's from the town was allowed to go home. Now, whoever didn't have the Germans in the brown uniforms, SK, they call it the Strafkommando, means Straf, means, my God. Straf, punishing commander like. They put about 50 one side, 50 one side, and everybody made sure that they have a whip or a piece of wood, and whoever didn't have had to run to the other side, and everybody was beating on us. One sister and my two brothers were so lucky that they were the first one who didn't have the papers, so one of them took them and walked them through, so the ones that get beaten up should know where their destination is. So my older sister got turned, they were beating her and beating her, and then came my turn. I was little and had a long coat and I was running, you know, and almost by the end, one was waiting for me and got me right over my face, right here where I have that mark. Naturally I passed out and was beating me. So when it was all over, they took us to a camp called Poniechówek. That was once an army barrack. Quite a few hundred people. For 3 days we had no food, no water. I couldn't wash off my blood, and my teeth got rotten with pus and all that. And they put us there. And we were at the camp. Now, finally, after a few days, they start giving us a little soup, a little bread. And I noticed that people had family that they used to live quite in the same area, used to bring packages to the people that are in that camp. So I had an idea, how could I be on the other side, pretending that I'm also visiting, bringing packages. So I told my two sisters, why don't you go and flirt with that soldier a little bit? So they went. And I broke a bottle and dug a hole underneath that wall and went out, cleaned myself up, went back to Plonsk. Went back to Plonsk. During that time when I went to Plonsk, my mother arrived also. She was there already. So there was again happiness. But what happened, when my brother Yidel got out of the hospital, He remained in Warsaw also, I think. I don't remember the way it is. But anyways, when everybody was in Plonsk, was already a little bit decent, that horrible time of evacuation passed by and we lived quietly. And I used to sell this cigarette paper, as I told you, to the market, to these peasants. And I made arrangements for two of my brothers to go to the farmers to work just for food, not to have such a burden on the cousins So like I sold my two brothers to slavery. And then myself, I got also one position to one farmer woman where I used to go and beg sometimes. She says, a big boy like you, why don't you become a shepherd to watch over the cows during the summer? So I tell her, would you hire a Jewish boy? She says, oh my God, she says, are you Jewish? If you're not gonna tell, I'm not gonna tell nobody. So I stood there the whole summer taking care of the house, of the cows. And by the end, she had to give me some potatoes. So I got some potatoes, got a nice payoff. But whenever I had time to consume it, then the total evacuation, like last solution, took place. So everybody, residents, non-residents, were evacuated to Auschwitz.
And this was in November 1942?
1942, yes. Because they took the children in August of 1942. And the total evacuation to concentration camp was taken in November 1942. So me, my two brothers, and my two sisters and mother were taken to Auschwitz. There was a three-day ride on the train, no food, no water. I remember Mama had the last, she had her wedding ring. She took it off and she gave that German soldier. So he scooped up a cup of snow so my mother could give me to get my lips a little wet. Then we arrived in Auschwitz, and then the selection like took place where we ordered men separate and women separate. So at that time I found out that they didn't need any women in labor camp, so mother and sisters went straight to guest chambers. Then came the turn for men. I stood with my two brothers. My two brothers were pointed to one side. I was pointed to the other side. After a while, I found myself standing with old men and young children. And on the other side again was like across the street were about 45 young boys. I didn't like where I am.
You didn't know what was going to happen?
I didn't know what's happening, but
you
I didn't like where I am. And my brother Isaac kind of gave me signals like, come. So I was watching when the soldier passed by, I ran to the other side. Very short time later, we were ordered to jog and came to, it says, Arbeit macht frei to Auschwitz. The place, that's where I was standing before, they were all to guest chambers. I came into Auschwitz as the youngest, about 18,000 people.
The How youngest. Old were you at the time?
More than
14.
The youngest I was, you know. And then naturally we came to Auschwitz. They told us to undress, took the clothes away. That's when we got the numbers. And I remember it was fall because the frost was sticking to our feet because we went in, we were showered and out naked. Then we had to go to another barrack. We were handed pants and shirt and all that. And then we were giving instructions, what? And people were so confused, and I had to open up my big mouth. What's wrong with you? Don't you understand? In Polish, like. And there was one man, he was like the bookkeeper for this block. It was in Auschwitz, block 2. I said, oh, come here, where are you? I said, I'm from Warsaw. He started to like me, and right away, a bowl of soup, a few potatoes. Right away, I got an extra bite. So they kept us there in Auschwitz for, my God, about a day or two. And then we were sent to another camp, to Buna. Buna, where everybody went into quarantine because it was a camp that were afraid of the outbreak of typhoid. So we kept in quarantine for a few weeks. And again, I was the youngest, you know, so what to do? I says, I can, if you want me, I says, I can keep your room clean, you know, and all that. So I got a job helping give out soup, helping cut the bread, you know. So there was a little bit extra always that I could keep my brother.
And what were
The oldest brother right away in Auschwitz, he was very, very, very curious. So he was walking and walking and walking. After that 15 minutes, took him away immediately. coal mines. That's Edel, the oldest brother. And me and my other brother went to the quarantine. Then time came to go to labor camp. There was no typhus, everybody was fine. Went to labor camp, and the block Schreiber, means the accountant, asked me, maybe you want to stay on? You can stay on and keep the little thing clean. It was like, they call it Tagesraum, they call it like the foyer. I says, yeah, I'll stay, you know. I knew what I have, I don't know what I'm going to get. So I stayed on. Then the next transport came from Birkenau, and my oldest brother arrived. My oldest brother arrived, and I talked to him, and I was begging him, please, whatever you do, don't drink the water, so you don't get sick and all that. But unfortunately, that transport brought typhus, and they sent them back to Birkenau.
That was your brother David.
Yeah, and he went back to Birkenau. And I stand on, then another transport came, again broke typhus, then everybody went. Also the whole people from the quarantine, all the blockhalters and the, everybody went to Birkenau, and I was sent to Birkenau also.
And was this when you lost touch with your other two brothers?
Yeah, my oldest brother went to coal mines. I was touch with him, lost touch with him. My brother Itzek in Buna was sent out to labor camp, and I was then sent to Birkenau. And right away I was looking for my oldest brother David, and I found out that he didn't make it. He was sick, and he was put in Barrack 7. Barrack 7 meant gas chambers. So I was in Birkenau. Again, I was trying to get to know some people, to get a little group together, to get a decent work, because everybody was assigned to different kind of work. So I used to work many jobs, like roofing commando, I remember. Then there was a job that one man was taking care of dogs. We used to help him feed the dogs, till finally I got acquainted with other people and was lucky to go into the Canada Commando. That was heaven. I mean, it was food. Many times when transport came, we had to go out on the ramp and help the people out of the trains and then take the luggage. But before we took the luggage, we took a look what's in there, because we knew that these people won't see that. We knew it. Unfortunately, they didn't know, but we knew. So we looked on the luggage to find a piece of bread, a salami, whatever, to eat before we put it on the truck. We ate. And then about 2 or 3 boys of us, we made up among ourselves in secret. If one of us sees a young woman with a child walking with her mother or with her grandmother, do the best you can, get that child and give it to the older person. No questions asked. This way we could save the younger woman if they need women that time for labor camp. And we managed to save a lot of young women, because if a young woman had a child, she had no chance, she had to go to guest chambers. But if she was, and the older woman had no chance, she had to get killed. So we took the child and gave it to the older woman. We said, it's good like that, come. And we said, however, there was one incident that I will take it to the grave with me, I will never forget it. While being there, I was hard as a stone, nothing bothered me. I was conditioned to it. You know, people can get brainwashed and conditioned. I could see a cousin or whoever that comes, I know he's gonna die in a few minutes. It didn't bother me, because I knew sooner or later it was gonna happen to me. But at the moment, did you bring anything that I could satisfy my hunger? But not that night. I think it was already beginning 44. Hungarian transport used to come from Hungary. Twice, two a day, two a night. Many people. once we were called out to the ramp at night, the flames from the crematoriums you could see from the ramp, and somehow those people knew what's going on. It was such a chaos, so much crying, so much yelling. Men put on the praying shawls with film. People in the train cut the veins. I mean, we were so touched, we didn't know, we were so confused what's going on. But the German says, make him be quiet, tell him it's okay. And then the cell says, yeah, Mutti, don't worry. You're going to a hospital, you're gonna get your clean bed, you're gonna get fed. Now here I see again a young girl with her mother, holding hands tight, and I say, I spoke to her Yiddish. I say, leave your mother alone, you know. And she does this to me. She takes me by the chin. She says, I'm 18 years old. I never loved in my life. Why are you taking me to death? You know? I can't even put a knife in my heart. I was so touched. I says, no, what do you say? I'm not doing that. Come with me, you'll see, everything will be all right. And I managed to get that girl among younger girls, and I managed, I mean, it wasn't my decision, but it was good because the young girls went to women's camp. And all the other were, God, there were, I think many of them were even burned alive. Because the crematoria, they didn't have enough time to guess so many. So what happened, and they laid the time already, they had to dig a pit, you know, a big hole, used to put with fire, and they used to put the people, and on the truck, dumped right in the fire alive. I mean, so I knew that girl got into the camp, but I found out that she got crazy while she was in camp. She lost her mind. Oh. I tried to save her. And that's how our life was. Full of excitement, full of miracles. But while I was working in that Canada, that was in I was laying in Birkenau on block 24, and the blocker still was a nice man from Holland, Heinz, I remember. One day was a request, I think from Stutthof, that they need people. So from every barra, from every block, so many. And he puts me in the transport. Yeah, excuse me, prior to that, there was an SS woman called Bertha, I think, walking around with a whip, you know, over her boots, and he points this one and this one and this one, and whoever accompanied wrote a number down, and she got my number down. I didn't pay any attention, I didn't know why.
She was walking around pointing at various people.
Pointing at boys, young boys.
Young boys.
That had good skin, that weren't, like they call Muslims, where the bones are sticking out.
Boys that were in good shape.
Boys in good shape, boys that were in Canada, had a little more food, so they had some skins that always passed the selection. So he puts my name on it, and I'm being shipped off to another camp. And I couldn't forgive him for that.
And when you were in Birkenau, about a year then,
yes,
was about March 43 to about
something like that.
March or April 44, and then you were shipped to
Stutthof.
To Stutthof.
And I didn't know why.